As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to the Shamrock after a bit of a break, and we've heard from our dear listeners as I was out on the alumni speaking tour this last week in Seattle, in Dallas, in Denver, everywhere I went. When's the Shamrock coming back? What's happened to the Shamrock? I love the Shamrock. We actually did, Matt and I recorded a show last week that I think was only heard by our producer, John Hayes, and my daughter, Sloan, who was just hanging out in the dining room as we recorded, ran into some technical difficulties and didn't get posted. So Matt, it's good to be with you again officially with everyone listening to what we have to talk about.
Yeah, I'm glad you made the time for us, Pete. You've been a road warrior in the speaking tour even more than Marcus Freeman was back in the spring. I mean, true traveler, Ryan Harris, Kim McDaniel, I'm sure a couple other Irish dignitaries that...
When I was in Dallas, no one gave me a cowboy hat, though, like Marcus got, which was a little disappointing. So maybe
it's something
to look
Ryan
forward
Kelly
to.
Ryan Kelly got boots during the, Sun Bowl.
Yes.
Back in 2010, and that picture went viral when Texas job opened multiple times in the last decade. What was that like? I mean, I'm sure it was good to reconnect with some of those guys. Ryan, obviously, is a friend of the show, and we see him every week. But what was the tour like?
It was good. There was so much enthusiasm for Notre Dame football.
The Shamrock.
The Shamrock, of course. I think that really brought people out to figure out what's up with the podcast. But I've done the Seattle group probably five times, and we had double the attendance of any other. At Denver, it was the largest crowd that I've had for that event. And in Dallas, I've never done Dallas before. It was sort of their student send up. I think they had more than 200 people there. It was myself, Cam McDaniel, and Dan Novikoff, who was an offensive lineman, more like during the era, Parsegian days, speaking. Chris Ackles, the stadium announcer, was there to sort of emcee it. But I mean, the enthusiasm for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame football this season is unique. I sort of described it on the speaking tour. It's like, I think the fan base is sort of waited for a head coach that they felt comfortable getting their arms around, and then also waiting for a head coach that then also wanted to embrace them back, opposed to like, I don't want to be touched, which I think was more of the vibe before. So yeah, I think that with Freeman here, it's a different vibe. And I mean, one thing that stood out to me is like the age of the alumni at the events skewed a lot younger all of a sudden. So I think maybe even sort of the youth of Marcus Freeman maybe is translating to the fan base on, the younger side, engaging a little bit more.
I'm curious about that last comment you made. I mean, my first year covering Notre Dame was 2011. So it was Brian Kelly's second year. So I didn't get to experience the whole like honeymoon period, if you will, that we're seeing now with Marcus Freeman. Part of it obviously was like, Notre Dame was so bad for so long, they were going to embrace anyone who wasn't Charlie Weiss back in 2010. And Brian Kelly at the time had the rep of being like, the son of a politician with Northeastern Catholic ties, and he's kind of the perfect fit for this place. I feel like what I read at the time, and again, I wasn't there, I can't compare it to right now, but it sounded, at least in that first year or two, not similar to now, but you know, a lot warmer and cuddlier than it ended up being as far as the head coach relationship with the fan base, the alumni, Notre Dame Nation as a whole. Is that accurate?
That's fair. It was not as warm as it is now, but like Brian Kelly never engendered that kind of like emotion from the Notre Dame fan base. I think there was like more of a desperation from the fan base back then because they had lost for so long. But I also think there was a lot of skepticism around Brian Kelly, just not because it was Brian Kelly, but just because like, all right, we've heard this before with Willingham, with Weiss, with Davey. Like, I remember even talking to Bill Scholl, who was like the AD for football. Now the AD, he's the AD at Marquette now. But and him saying like, even he sensed like people were. It was more like, all right, let's wait and see. And I think with Marcus Freeman, there's not a whole lot of like let's wait and see vibes from the fan base. It's like, yeah, we're on board with this guy. So I think that was something I definitely picked up from you know, these alumni events that people want to be all in with Marcus Freeman in a way that even at the beginning, I think maybe for like a month with Brian Kelly in 2012, they were all in with him before the, like at the end of the season, before the Alabama game. But I don't think that there was ever sort of this embrace of Kelly the way that there is of Freeman just based on these alumni events.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, especially those first 2 years for Brian Kelly, it wasn't all right, are we going to be good? It's like, can we ever be good again? Yes. And I think every blue blood goes through that identity crisis at some point or another. We see it right now at Nebraska. We saw it with Michigan before Jim Harbaugh came back. I mean, you know, Alabama, even before Nick Saban came there. And I think there was always a sense of like, well, if this guy can't do it, if Brian Kelly, you know, the Irish guy with political tie, Northeast ties, who's won big every single level he's been at, can't do it. Like, can we ever be good? Like,
right.
It was a decade ago this summer, the can they ever be relevant again discussion like was like an actual thing. Whereas now it's like, can they win a national championship? And I think the answer to the can part is yes. And I think we've seen enough from the Freeman era without coaching a regular season game so far to let people dream that big and not feel like it's too far out of reach. But I think the combination of the success they've had the last 5 years or so, adding a young, very charismatic coach who's a hell of a recruiter so far, has created this fever pitch of excitement around the program that I can't remember.
I'm with you on that. I think that, look, the roster, I mean, we bang on Brian Kelly's recruiting quite a bit. However, the roster is way better now than it was when Brian Kelly got here in terms of the balance on both sides of the ball. And like, you know, I was out at practice on Friday of last week for the full practice. You saw like bits and pieces on Saturday and Monday.
Yes, sir, Monday.
I mean, you can't, to me at least, it's like, I can't, for all the questions about Marcus Freeman, I look at the roster and be like, you know, is it the perfect roster? Certainly not. But I look at Notre Dame and see like, this is a really talented team, particularly on the lines. You know, it's hard to look at Notre Dame and not think they're going to be very good this year, just based on how good the offensive and defensive lines appear.
It's funny you say that, cause that was kind of my takeaways from being around 2 days, both Saturday and Monday over this past week/weekend. We've talked about the vibes, right? We just talked about it with the fan base. We talk about it with the program. There's obviously like this unspoken understanding that holy cow, we've got like the biggest opener we could possibly have in week one. We've got to be ready for that. And if we're not, we're going to get a rude awakening. But I just get the sense that this is a very confident / veteran team right now that knows itself about as well as a program that has a new first time head coach can possibly know itself. I mean,
and talking to all.
And a new quarterback. I mean, talking to, you know, all the linebackers yesterday, like it you would never know that this is a group that's on its third position coach in as many years. Like even Al Golden was talking about how when he came, I think when he was with the Lions to scout and interview draft prospects, and he talked to Drew Tranquil and wow, this guy learned a lot from Clark Lee. Like he knows the defense really well. And like, that was multiple eras ago. And it's not like, oh, hey, there's this constant turnover. Like people are getting fired. People are leaving for other jobs. No, like the last two guys literally became Power Five head coaches. Mm-hmm. And the guy coaching them right now is a former Power Five head coach at Miami. And yeah, you know, I asked a couple of players this, and maybe I phrased it the wrong way. I said, you know, how do you essentially protect the culture of this room? Because they keep saying, Coach Freeman keeps saying it's a player led program. It's a player led program. And like, we don't protect it, but like even hearing Al Golden say, like, he was almost like taken aback by how much they knew and how, like the depth of their questions. It's not like he's teaching a new playbook and a new language to these guys. It's very much, I think he used the term riffing. Like he can have adult conversations with these guys, which is interesting considering he just came from the NFL level over the past 6 years. But I think speaks to the unique culture of that room and just how they, I don't want to say persevere because it's not like they're going through anything difficult, but it is challenging to have a new voice at the head of that room every single year. I mean, you know, Bo Bauer, perfect example, same linebackers coach / defense coordinators first 3 years here. And now his last three, which I guess overlaps with that third year, all has different voices. And it's hard to find three more distinct, unique voices and personalities than Clark Lea, Marcus Freeman, and Al Golden.
When I was reading your story
and James Laurinaitis, and James Laurinaitis, I might add, who's no small voice in that room as well.
It was funny reading your story on like the linebackers on The Athletic. You referenced Bo Bauer and like three different position coaches. You know who was the defense coordinator when he committed to Notre Dame?
Brian Van Gorder.
It was Brian Van Gorder. I mean, that's how long ago.
Greg Hudson.
Yeah, Greg Hudson. Bo Bauer. I mean, it was before the 2016 season he committed to Notre Dame. And in that way, I think that Bo Bauer is probably older than some of the guys Al Golden coached with the Bengals last year. You know, if you had a rookie, he's older than a rookie because he's in his sixth year now. So it's a very mature group. And I mean, I think you've sort of looked at some of the old linebackers Notre Dame has had. The ones that maybe are not like athletic freaks, like I'm not talking about Jalen Smith here, but yeah, or it'd be Joe Schmidt. I mean, Drew Tranquil was a very good athlete.
Uso.
Good draft pick. Yeah, Wusu Koromoah was an athletic freak. But like when you had the older guys who can get a lot done, it's probably a really good match for a defensive coordinator who wants to get a lot done because of – you know, just how smart they are, you know, the checks, the adjustments, the playbook. It can be complicated when your linebackers are Kaiser, Bertrand, and Bauer with Leah Fowl rotating in. So it's a unique spot. I think it's how Notre Dame takes what Golden can do and the, you know, sort of higher, you know, graduate level defensive playbook, how Notre Dame can sort of take that with graduate level linebackers and make that go, I think is sort of an underrated part of how good this team can be. Quarterback is really interesting to me because I get the sense that even though they haven't named a starting quarterback, there certainly is no, you know, drama about it. It's just a matter of how quickly they want to name Tyler Buchner as the starting quarterback. And I mean, you spent a little time with Buchner on Saturday and Reese, and I'm sure we've had conversations with similar people around the Google all summer. It's just, it's never a question of like how talented he could be. It's just, you know, can he sort of put it all together and do the everything else that a starting quarterback has to do at Notre Dame with, from a leadership point of view? Not that I think there are doubts about it. It's just, he hasn't done it yet. And now he has to sort of, instead of following, as he followed Jack Cohn last year, he's got to be the guy in front of the room. And that's, even if it's, I think, a jump that everyone around Notre Dame thinks he will make fine, it's, you still got to do it.
I mean, that's the first thing Tommy Reese said when he was asked, you know, what do you want to see from Tyler Buchner this camp, was like, if you're the starting quarterback, you have a presence about you when you walk into that huddle and you take that snap. And there's no doubt about who's leading this offense. And that's what we want to see. And Buchner spoke, you know, multiple times about, you know, some variation of the word confidence. Basically said, if you're confident, that's the first step. Now you can, you know, master the offense, so to speak. And Buchner did his best to remind us all when we spoke to him Saturday that it was two practices in shorts with no pads they'd done nothing outside red zone drills. He was very much not getting ahead of his skis right there. And look, he reminded me a lot of Tommy Rees, the player, at least from a mental standpoint, from an interview standpoint. And even to hear Tommy Rees use that, you know, kind of descriptor of Tyler Buchner as a guy who needs to take command of the offense. I mean, you know, that was Tommy Rees. I mean, the guy went 4-0 as a true freshman, 3-star recruit with a new coaching staff, and ended up starting a heck of a lot of games throughout the rest of his career because he was able to win over that locker room, and because he knew the playbook, and because, you know, there was no doubt who was leading that offense when he was under center. And I think that relationship is only grown. Yeah, I mean, I think I wrote this in my story. Buchner committed to Notre Dame in March of 2019. That was a year before we knew what COVID was. Like, that's how long ago it was. And he's 19 years old still, and he's only entering his second year of college. And, you know, he's him and Drew Pine are very good friends. They've both spoken a lot about that. And, you know, as with any quarterback competition, you know, both guys get asked about the relationship and what do they talk about. And Buchner, you know, kind of casually said, like, yeah, we don't talk about the competition. And someone responded, like, well, what do you talk about? And he was like, there's a lot of things in life other than just our quarterback competition, which is a sobering reminder for all of us, media, fans, probably people in the building. Like, these are 19-year-old college kids. And, you know, as Tommy Rees referenced, like, he battled Andrew Hendricks, you know, in some form or another every year they were in school together, and they were part of the same recruiting class. And he was in Andrew Hendricks' wedding long after they graduated, and they're still the best of friends. Like, so to your point, there's no drama with, you know, how this will unfold. The drama is what will presumably number 12 look like when the lights finally come on, because that's a hell of an opening stage to make your debut.
Oh, there's no doubt. I think going back to spring practice, I could be mistaken, but I'm pretty sure that either Buchner or Pine said that for like Valentine's Day, they both went to Chicago with their girlfriends together. Like, they're friends, which is like totally normal college stuff. You know, not everything is like an NFL cutthroat position competition. So that's fine. And that's normal. Was there anything else that sort of turned your head during your practice doings? For me, it was sort of watching Tobias Merriweather running around, the freshman receiver. Had heard a lot of good things from people on, you know, inside the Goog during the summer about his workouts, about really his football IQ was very high. The staff was very pleased about how much he just sort of understood offense and concepts and sort of bigger picture stuff in a way that maybe even some of like the sophomore receivers did not. So that was probably the largest, like, okay, I could see where Merriweather is going to be the exception rather than the rule with freshman receivers who come in and like, okay, they look good in the first couple weeks of August, and the season starts, so you don't hear from them again. They need Merriweather badly to be something. But I think there's a very, very, very good chance that he will be.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, you saw me nodding as you said that. I mean, that's my one takeaway just from talking to people around the program and from the very limited viewing periods we've got. And it's Tobias Merriweather looks like the real deal so far. And now we've said this about freshman receivers before, at least have gotten ahead of ourselves with freshman receivers before. But if Notre Dame's going to take that next step this season, they're going to need some kind of leap or some kind of surprise of that magnitude. And I think especially with the new starting quarterback, you know, that so far so good. Now today's Tuesday. I believe today's the first day there in pads, practice number 5. We are not there. We'll obviously learn a lot more just from seeing them play actual football. But that, as far as like surprises and unknowns, I mean, we talked about the linebackers, we talked about the defensive line. I think the front 7 is going to be really, really good this year. That's the biggest kind of like eye opener so far. And again, we're probably projecting a little bit here, but that has to be an encouraging sign if you're the Irish coaching staff so far.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
If Tobias Merriweather finished the season with 25 catches for 462 yards and five touchdowns, like you're taking that right now for Notre Dame?
That's a very specific line. Like, are you referencing someone in the past when you say that?
I am. But like, if you're Notre Dame, would you take that?
I'm trying to think who that might be now. What year was that?
It was 2016.
EQ or Chase Claypool?
It was
Chase Claypool.
No. It was Kevin Stefferson.
Oh.
That was his freshman
year. Let's make all the Stefferson comparisons.
Yeah. Well, I don't say that to bring like
2016 was great. It was a great camp for him.
Does not need to enter the chat here. But
yeah,
I think if you're Notre Dame, like you can get or if you're an Notre Dame fan, you can sort of get a little carried away about like, okay, what Merriweather can be as a freshman. But like if he did that, I think Notre Dame would take that in a heartbeat. Because it's rare for a freshman to really produce with any kind of consistency, but almost 500 yards and the five touchdowns in particular, I think that would be a great, great start for Tobias Merriweather as a college football player.
If he does that within the context of everyone we think we know about playing to their own standard, then yes, I would agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, you need Lorenzo.
But if they get another injury or whatever, they're good. Yeah.
Styles has got to be 800, 900, 1,000 yards, which I think he has in them. And then, you know, Mayer, I want to find a prop bet about like how much I can pump up Mayer's receptions for the seasons. Like what kind of odds could I get for like 105 catches for a tight end? Cause I feel like I might bet the over on that.
What's the Notre Dame record for a tight end or for anyone really?
He broke it last year. For receptions in a season. I don't have the number off the top of my head, but like, I wonder if he could challenge more like the Michael Floyd, was it 2011 right. When he went over 100? I think he went over 100 catches that year. Like that to me is kind of the sandbox that Michael Mayer can play in this.
Mayer had 71 catches last year.
Yeah. So that was a tight end.
I think 100 is an appropriate, like, yeah, he could do that.
That's what you're shooting for. And yeah, I would love to see how Mayer would handle that because when he broke the tight ends record at Stanford last year, he was very magnanimous when he thanked the other 11 players on the field with him because that was a big part of how he broke the record. And they were like, wait a minute, Mike, there are only 10 other players on the field with you.
Oh.
But anyway, that's Michael Mayer for you. He is a character. I think one of the things that I'm interested to see moving forward, I think we get a full practice next week and there are a few more glimpses this week, is we have access to Harry Heastand, the offensive lineman, Thursday, I believe, later this week. Interested to sort of chat with Blake Fisher for the first time in quite a while, and Joe Alt since the first time midseason. You know, the Jarrett Patterson, Zeke Correll combination, how that works. It's notable to me at least that when I've watched Harry Heastand at practice and he's been coaching like the left side of the line with Alt and Patterson and Correll together, it's been like all positive all the time. And as we know, Harry Heastand is not one to hold back with criticism when it's warranted. So if you're winning over Harry Heastand in week one of training camp, that I think bodes rather well for the offensive line moving forward. And then, you know, the corner play, you know, Lewis, Bracey, Cam Hart, I think has a chance to be pretty good as a starting lineup. And then can you get something from Jaden Mickey as your fourth? Does he move into your third later in the year? But I do think there's just a chance that that Notre Dame in some ways could be better at some of the, at least in the secondary, than I would have thought when camp started.
My concern there is essentially who they're opening with. Because they're not going to face a better group of receivers. I don't know if there are a better group of receivers in the country than Ohio State. And I don't know if there's a more fragile position on any roster at any level of football than quarterback, as we've seen at Notre Dame with early season meltdowns, you know, decade ago or so. That's where, like, I like want to pause myself before from saying anything or making any prognostications before that game, because I just think if that game goes wrong for them, and to be fair, anyone facing Ohio State's receivers usually is on the losing end of it. You know, it could torpedo into a long season for them if they don't handle that the right way. And I just, based on what we'd last seen from these guys last year, based what we last seen from the current Ohio State crop receivers in the Rose Bowl against Utah's defense, I'm pausing all praises, expectations, even bad words. I just want to like see them get through that before I can really give you an idea of how I think they'll be this year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Is game one going to be a great test of that secondary? Probably be more of an unfair examination, but I think over the course of the season, they have a chance to be maybe better than the fan base would have thought on January 1st at 10:30 PM. At which point you were like, holy crap, this group is struggling. I don't know how they can put it all together a year from now at Ohio State. And like Ohio State's going to torch a lot of people. Notre Dame might be one of those teams, but I think there's more material to work with there than at least I would have thought coming out of the end of last season. I don't know was there anything else that caught your attention? Audric Estime for me on Friday was interesting. Maybe it's the number 7 that just like looks fairly slimming on a big guy. He moved around a lot better than I thought a big back would be. I always thought he was maybe more of your, it's 3rd and 3. I'll get you 3.5 yards, like Leroy Horde or something. But he moved really well. As a number 2 back behind Chris Tyree, who also I think looks more like physically put together than I remember last season. You know, maybe they have a little bit more there to work with.
It's funny. Tommy Reese got asked about that. Like, can this guy be more than, can Audric Estime be more than like what we think he is by looking at him? And Tommy basically said, like, look, I'm with you. Like, I've seen him in practice, so I know what he's capable of. But like, you take one look at that guy and you immediately stereotype him as this third down bruiser and not a guy with much more nimble legs than he probably gets credit for. So that would be a very positive development for what's a very thin running back core going into week one. And as we've seen, and as I think you wrote in the mailbag earlier this month, if there is a formula for, you know, beating Ohio State, it's punching them in the mouth like that. It's taking advantage of what in the last couple of years has not been the strongest linebacking core in the country out of Columbus, and doing what Oregon did last year, doing what Michigan did last year, and winning those short yarded situations and keeping the ball out of their offense's hands.
I don't know if there's anything else on the team you wanted to jump into before we get into, we had a fairly lengthy conversation on our mystery podcast heard by 2 people last week about,
we broke all sorts of realignment news.
Oh, like, it was unbelievable. we revealed the future of Notre Dame's conference affiliation, but I feel awkward repeating it. But we did get into like the $75 million figure that Dennis Dodd sort of threw out there or reported, and I haven't seen it really picked up elsewhere. But last night, word started to leak out about the Big Ten's media rights deal, which, like, if these figures are correct, let's just sort of assume that they are for the sake of discussion. Looking at $350 million from CBS for the second Big Ten game, not even the first one.
For half of the B package. Like, they're splitting that with NBC. Like, that's not even, that's for 13 games.
Yeah. So it's like Big Ten game 2.5 on average. For $350 million. I'm assuming the NBC deal will come in something similar. The Fox deal, I think, is, I've seen that reported out over $500 million. Basically, you're cruising into the billions at that point with the potential for a streaming add-on, whether it be Apple or Amazon. It's not really clear. It's probably a conversation for another time, but like the streaming aspect of it, whether it's Amazon or Apple, I was told that when Amazon got the NFL package, like they don't have a single camera for that. They're just leasing all of NBC's stuff because they have so much money they can afford to do it. But Big Ten probably cruising into the $1 billion range. There's a bunch to unpack there, whether it is NBC having the primetime slot for the Big Ten. Where does that leave Notre Dame? You know, can they have a primetime home game? I'm assuming that they're going to make that work. But also the CBS one, that's sort of the figure that's been reported the most at $350 million for 13 games. If CBS is getting a good, not a great, but a good Big Ten game every week for $350 million, how much are seven Notre Dame home games worth? Because at that point, I'm like, wait a minute, maybe the $75 million actually is undervalued.
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of math out there, which I'm not good at, but I did do the math with this one, which basically seven, you know, at that rate, seven games is 108, would be valued at $188 million, roughly. Yeah. Now, we both, when we saw that initial report about a month ago, about $75 million, as Notre Dame's, you know, reported asking price from NBC to stay independent, and NBC would essentially supplement that with shoulder programming from the Big Ten or another conference. I heard mixed reactions around Notre Dame. I had some people flat out dismiss it. I had other people say, no, that sounds pretty much like what we've talked about in the past. Yeah. And I think my reaction initially, as someone who doesn't work in like the TV, you know, negotiation space like you, was, well, 75 when you're getting probably 15 to 20 right now. And again, this is a private school. We don't have like tax documents or, you know, we can't FOIA this the way we can with, you know, the Big Ten and other public schools, but Notre Dame is believed to be making somewhere in the ballpark of $15 to $20 million per year from their NBC deal. You go from that to 75, and that sounds like a major upgrade, even if it's not quite what you'd be getting as a full-fledged member of the Big Ten and their media rights deals. Now, John Aaron of the Sports Business Journal, and I feel like others, you know, more plugged into that scene, all immediately came out and said, like, that would be a bargain for NBC, paying only $75 million, which makes me wonder, like, how much are they leaving on the table from their media rights deals? But then you see the reports coming out last night and you do the math. And I know it, not everything is an apples to apples comparison, and there's something to be said for having essentially your own network. But like seven games at that rate that CBS would be paying for, again, 13 Big Ten games, like half of their Tier B package, that's $180 million, which is what, $170 million more than Notre Dame is getting right now from NBC. And I know it's not that simple, but you know, for argument's purposes, we'll go with that. I think this is good news for Notre Dame in the sense that if NBC is in play, as they reportedly are, that's good. That elevates the Notre Dame football product on NBC. Perhaps they can go back to the drawing board with their current deal early. It's currently not up till 2025-26. And Notre Dame can get a lot more money out of that. I don't know what, you know, everyone has a price, right? What would the price of independence be? They always pay that independent tax, like you say. That tax presumably grows higher with as much more money as the SEC and Big Ten make every year. You know, how does Notre Dame bridge that gap, so to speak? Is that sustainable? If you get your own deal at $188 million, it sure as hell sustainable. I don't think that's going to happen.
That's more than anyone else is making. I mean, that's more than the top of the Big Ten or the top of the SEC would make. Like, I think if Notre Dame would take half of that and be thrilled, because then they would be in the same ballpark as everybody else when you throw in the ACC revenue that's still on the table.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I got a lot of questions about this, when I was in Seattle and Dallas and Denver about, you know, where this is all going to go. And I've written this and it's probably worth repeating. It's like, I think we share this perspective is that Notre Dame is not going to be the first to jump. They're not going to be an early adopter, but they're not going to be the last one on the boat either. Second point, Jack Swarbrick is not going to make any decisions without complete information. Is getting a lot more complete now with these figures coming out from the Big Ten or around the Big Ten. So I think with that in mind, you know, if Notre Dame can afford to stay, it seems like Notre Dame can afford to stay independent more today than I would have thought 24 hours ago. That was sort of what my impression was on these numbers.
I would agree with that, which is why I never bought into this, like, public notion of, like, all right, they're on the clock now. Like, you know, they have all the leverage. You know, there's, if they don't do it now, when are they going to do it? Like, I never saw this as this kind of urgent, they need to decide immediately matter. But I do think the additions of USC and UCLA to the Big Ten certainly changed the math and the big picture from why would Notre Dame ever join a conference to, this is something they should probably seriously think about right now when you look at the financial implications at play. Now, again, we get another reported data point last night from those CBS numbers that came out. And to agree with you, I agree with you that, you know, maybe they don't need to do this. Now, I do think as conferences continue to expand, because I don't think this thing ever truly ends, that number just continues to grow further and further apart from whatever Notre Dame or any individual entity can make as an independent. And I think in that regard, and in the scheduling regard, because again, the bigger these conferences get, the harder inventory becomes for scheduling games. Like, I see it as an inevitability that Notre Dame one day joins the Big Ten. Now, I don't say that thinking it's going to happen tomorrow, but within the next 5 years, probably, because I don't...
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone knows what college sports is going to look like in 5 years, they're kidding themselves. Like, I don't think, like, I just think, like, you already see, like, you know, Sean Clifford and that group from the Big Ten that was maybe going to unionize. Then they said, we're not going to unionize. But Kevin Warren basically said, like, we want you involved with discussions and potential revenue sharings. Like, I think when you go down that road, and again, there's a lot of time and a lot of work to get done between from getting from point A to point B, in that regard. But I think now that that's, like, out there as a somewhat tangible idea, revenue sharing, like players getting a cut of the pie, once that, like, becomes a thing, you're either recruiting to a group where you can make money or you're not. And you're, like, if you have the opportunity to be a part of that group, and if you want to still be in the business of big time football, if you're Notre Dame, I don't see how you don't eventually get on board with that. Now, that's further down the road, but I think you're starting to see the plate shift a little bit toward where college sports is going. And I think there's only one way forward, and you're either going to be a part of it or you're not going to be in business at all.
This, and the most pointed question I got was, like, tell me where Notre Dame is in 5 years in terms of the conferences or not. And my prediction would be with Notre Dame will be in the Big Ten within 5 years.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I won't go as far as say, will the ACC even be around in 5 years, because they've got a deal that goes through 2036, but I think everyone's on very shaky footing right now. Yes. If you're not in the SEC or Big Ten.
Yeah. I think that's sort of where this is heading. And I think that Notre Dame I think we share a belief on this too. Notre Dame is probably more comfortable with conference affiliation internally than maybe some of the fan bases. But I think even, again, being out of this alumni group, I think the fans are probably more comfortable with it than I would have thought.
I was going to ask you, what was the reception?
One guy came up to me and said, F them. That was his take on Big Ten affiliation. I think he may have also been around.
How old was this guy?
I think he may have seen Fielding Yost coach Michigan. Definitely on the older side. So, but I think the younger fan base is just like, you know, independence is great. But I think people want to see good games, and the Big Ten offers better game. Like the inventory of games within the Big Ten is far superior than it is in the ACC. I've enjoyed the Clemson series. I feel like that's turned into a rivalry, but then you get to Miami. That's good. After that, I feel like, you know, Florida State has some history that has nothing to do with the ACC. You know, the rivalry with Miami has nothing to do with the ACC. But after those three schools, everybody's sort of the same. And if you look at the Big Ten and the, you know, after you get past Ohio State and Michigan to the Iowa, Wisconsin, I mean, Purdue has history behind it. I'm not saying that's a big game, but Penn State, Michigan State, USC, UCLA, there's a lot more meat on the bone, I think, from fan interest in the Big Ten right now than there is to being independent, but being stuck with the five ACC games when really only one or two of them are interesting.
That's the thing about, I mean, better quality of competition, better environments and venues. And like, you know, Nebraska, great example. Like they can never,
I didn't even mention Nebraska. Like it's a huge brand.
They could go 4-8 for the rest of time, and that's still going to be a cool game. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if there's anything like that in the ACC, like Florida State, maybe, but like, it's just, every single program in the Big Ten for the most part has history or has something cool and unique that makes it, you know, Purdue, another great example. Now they won 9 games last year and are in pretty good footing right now, but like, that's a pretty big in-state rivalry that maybe gets overlooked nationally. But if that's your 6th best game on any given year, that's pretty good. Like that's a good opponent. That's a decent venue. There's a lot of history there. Michigan State, another example, like there's a lot more tradition there on the gridiron, and there's a lot more ties institutionally, I think, or at least from a football program standpoint with Notre Dame than there are with say Duke football or North Carolina football.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of connection. And I think that you're sort of seeing, like, there are a lot of reasons why attendance is down in college football. I'm not putting this all on Notre Dame's ACC schedule, but I don't sense there's much appetite from Notre Dame fans about coming to Notre Dame games against ACC opponents not named Clemson and Miami. And I think you sort of see that with some of the crowds that they've drawn. You know, Notre Dame is still a big deal on the road, you know, when they go to Duke, or they go to North Carolina, or they go to Virginia. That's a big game down there, but
they're all small venues though.
Yeah. But when those teams come to Notre Dame, it's not. And I think that the Big Ten offers so much more opportunity to, you know, the big venue showcase game, you know, whether that is on Fox at noon or CBS at 3:30, NBC at night, it will get like a premium treatment. That way it will be a big deal more often when Notre Dame is playing on Saturday in the Big Ten than it is with the ACC with this kind of half independence.
I mean, you'll see this with UCLA, right? Like the Rose Bowl will sell out every single Big Ten team they host at the Rose Bowl. The first time will sell out.
I think. Well, maybe not Maryland or Rutgers, but.
Maybe not Maryland Rutgers. I forget they're in the Big Ten.
Like
but
the top 8 teams in the Big Ten. Yeah, I think that'd be a sellout game.
Yeah, I mean probably even more than that. I mean, it's a great venue that doesn't have like the greatest local football tradition in terms of UCLA, who hasn't had the best product on the field every year. But there are a lot of alums in that space, just like there are a lot of I know a lot of USC alums here who are thrilled about it in Chicago because they're like, you mean I never have to get on a plane to see my team play again? Like, this is great being in the Midwest. Like, when you have big brands like that, like a Notre Dame, everywhere you go, there are fans that are ready to pay a premium to get in and see those games. And I just think it makes more sense. It's more like-minded at the Big Ten level for Notre Dame than it is at the ACC level.
There's no doubt. There is no doubt. We should probably talk a little bit of recruiting before we wrap up. And we'll be back next Tuesday. I don't know if I mentioned that at the top of the show or not. August 16th will be our next show. And we'll be weekly for the rest of training camp and then twice weekly during the season. Matt and I will continue to podcast half asleep after night games immediately. So you have something to listen to Sunday morning when you get up. And you're going to Ohio State, right?
I am. I booked that yesterday. I debated whether to take like the first flight out Sunday morning and go straight from the Shamrock to the airport, but that just never works out well. So stick around that afternoon.
Well, last week, Notre Dame picked up four-star linebacker Jaden Osbury from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, whose high school is actually on the LSU campus. Osbury's father is an athletic administrator and former LSU football player. On top of that, they picked up a four-star running back, Dylan Edwards from Kansas. He's a former Kansas State commitment, a verified 4.3 speed guy. He's also 5'9", 165. So, you know, more of an all-purpose back than just a true every down blazer. Ben Minich, a three-star safety from Ohio, picked up. They wanted a fifth defensive back in this class. Also, it's probably pretty good insurance with Peyton Bowen, the four-star, almost five-star safety from Dallas looking around. And then over the weekend, they picked up a four-star offensive lineman from Pennsylvania, Peter Jones. So at that right now, as it stands, at least on the 24/7 sports composite team rankings, Notre Dame remains number one in the class of 2023 and number one in the class of 2024. I don't expect that Notre Dame will finish number one in the class of 2023, but again, we're sitting here on August 9th. It's worth noting that, for Notre Dame to be number one in the country in recruiting is significant.
You forgot your namesake committing to Brian Kelly.
Sheldon Sampson Jr.
At LSU on Saturday.
Yeah. No relation, but no. Certainly an upgrade in Sampson's for Notre Dame's former head coach. I guess that was his first next step to find a Sampson that actually do something for him.
He should have tweeted that. All the ranking talk, the coaches poll came out yesterday and Texas got a first place vote. More importantly, Notre Dame is number five, which is probably appropriate. I don't know. What do you think?
Somebody asked me about this. It was like, man, that seems really high. And my reply was basically like, well, somebody's got to be number five.
Right.
And I feel like it's, you know, we talk about this a lot. I don't know if it was last year, or the year before, where it felt like there was a pack in college football that had separated a little bit. And this year to me, it's Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State. And then you could have 4 through 10 mixed up. You could leave them vacant and just like have a gap there. Whether Notre Dame was 10th or 5th or 7th, I'm not really sure it makes that much of a difference, or 4th even, frankly. I don't know if Clemson is that much better than Notre Dame, but I feel like there is a gap between Georgia at 3 and everybody else at 4.
Yes.
Notre Dame's sort of in that next tier of teams, but I can't sit here with a whole lot of conviction and say, oh, Notre Dame is overrated or they should be higher. I think our boss, Stu Mandel, sort of did an overrated, underrated. And I was sure he was going to have Notre Dame as overrated just because 5 seemed a little bit high, but he went on both sides of Notre Dame. He said Clemson was overrated at 4 and Michigan was overrated at 6. So, you know, by virtue of that, maybe he thinks Notre Dame should be 4 and Notre Dame is underrated. I don't know, but it's somebody's got to be 5. It might as well be Notre Dame. And that means Notre Dame will open with a top 5 game on the road for the first time since like the Holtz era, when Notre Dame Michigan was like big time marquee game as a top 5 game, I think on a semi-regular basis.
It's almost as if they should play these Big Ten teams some more, Pete. We have a staff poll coming out, I think, next week or sometime this month. We all have to fill out.
Not remember where I had Notre Dame.
Okay. I think I had them at 6, but I got, while filling it out, it was the same thing. I'm like, I can't. And look, especially with preseason polls, I think everyone, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, right? Like, it's not like, all right, we're voting them off resume. Some people vote them off projections. I try to vote them off what I know about these teams right now. Like, I had Michigan as a top 10 team. I remember that. I don't think Michigan will finish the season as a top 10 team, but when you look at that roster and you look at what they accomplished last year, it's hard not to put them as a top 10 team right now. But I do think, you know, you can say we're number five and that sounds great. And it's not bad. I'm not dismissing it, but the gap, it's almost like the gap between a five-star and a low four-star, as far as like, it may be only one check mark away, yep. But the gap from the top three and everyone else, I think is still pretty significant. And we'll figure out how significant that is in 3 weeks, right?
It is coming up. Yeah. Less than a month from the opener, which I feel like we're going to, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and suddenly I'll be walking into the horseshoe. Like it's sometimes this, I don't know, the preseason sometimes feel like it can drag. I feel like this one for Notre Dame is going to like be fly by in a flash. And suddenly we're going to be in Columbus and podcasting of the Shamrock afterwards, trying to make sense of what the hell we just watched.
It's funny because we've done that fairly recently, right? With those Monday and Sunday night, but like the Florida State game last year, the opener on Sunday night, the Louisville opener 2019 Monday night, like those were like good, exciting games. And like from a national standpoint, huge because it was the only game going on. But like, I guess
Texas
I guess
in 2016 on Sunday night.
Yeah. So like, I guess like last year, like they made that game more interesting than they should have, but like going into it, it was like, oh, they're only a 7-point favorite. Like they should win. They're better than Florida State. Like there wasn't a whole lot of pre-game doubt about how those games would unfold. Whereas this one, it's like, no, really, this is a big deal. Like really big deal. And if you win this one, holy crap, like we'll have an all-time Shamrock and probably an all-time season.
Oh my
God. Storylines.
That was one thing when I was in Denver, Ryan Harris and I were doing that event. And I sort of referenced like, what if Notre Dame wins that game? What will college football look like relative to Notre Dame? And I threw this out to Harris. I mean, he played in this game. If Matt Leiner had tripped and fell, if Reggie Bush didn't push him into the end zone and Notre Dame had won that game, like to me, that's what it will feel like. If you're Notre Dame, if you win that game in terms of where they fit in the national landscape, it's at that point, you're talking about Notre Dame getting first place votes in the poll the next week.
10-year fully guaranteed deal for Marcus Freeman with no buyout or offsetting provisions.
Yes. Which that's now, what I mean, let's do we give Notre Dame credit for being a trendsetter on the 10-year fully guaranteed coaching contract? I don't think
for that part of it. Yeah. Not for still paying him out when he's got two or three other jobs in your years after coaching at Notre Dame. It's funny because like you think about that game, and that's such like a cultural, like historical, like everyone knows where they were when they were watching it game. The USC one in 05, yeah. Bush question. It's hard to replicate that, but certainly the hype will be very, very, very big. I'll go as far as to say they'll be number two. I would vote them one if they beat Ohio State based off 1 week's body of work. I think Georgia would still be one because they're playing a pretty good Oregon team. And they're
yeah, I'm not saying they should be. Voters. They would be number one. I'm just saying somebody would vote them number one.
Is there, and I know you talked a little bit about this on the AP podcast with our friend Ralph Russo, like I hate to put it in these terms, but is there an acceptable path to a loss? Like, what's the easiest loss to stomach?
I think if you lost by a touchdown, like if it sort of looked like the Georgia game in 2019, I think you would take that in a second. I think the Florida State in 2014 would be a little bit difficult, like more difficult to take based on the nature of that. You look back at what Clemson in 2015, I think that would be tough to stomach because you felt like the coaching staff screwed it up.
Right.
But like the two, like if you lost by 7 and there was no great, like, oh man, this was a first time head coach really looked like a first time head coach. Then I think you can sort of swallow hard and move on and feel pretty good about where the season's going. If you're Notre Dame,
2019 Georgia, I think is kind of the perfect, like neutral. Okay.
Yeah.
We know where we stand. We're going to be a damn good football team this year. Let's go win our next 11 games. Like Florida State and Clemson, like those games just do not evoke pleasant memories from 2014 and 2015. Like 2014, obviously, you know, the last play just colors everything, but 2015 Clemson, I'm with you. Like even Brian Kelly afterward was like, yep, we just blew a tremendous chance to really break through here. Like we could have won this game and we didn't. I don't know if you could say that about that 2019 Georgia game. Like they lost to a better team and had a fake chance to win at the end, which is all you can ask for.
All right. Before we wrap up, I think we're going to have a new semi-segment on the show, capitalizing on a running joke that we have on Twitter and from our
previous joke, show. Pete. It's not a joke.
Yeah. It's, I mean, yeah, it's definitely not a joke because it seems real. These people are getting real bumps in their day-to-day lives. Of course, we're speaking about the Shamrock bump where we look at some of our former guests and just see how well they're doing. So my Shamrock bump of the week or the month or the summer goes to Tyler Plants, former Notre Dame walk-on who got married in July in the Basilica. Father John, you know, did the ceremony, which is significant, you know, just pulling Father John. But if your fiance and now wife is the niece of Father John, it might be a little bit easier. So well done, Tyler Plants.
Shamrock. He's also a first-time head coach who's getting ready for his debut here in a couple of weeks at Providence Catholic. I am shocked, absolutely shocked, Pete, that you did not go with the Slippery Fox, who I believe over text messages last night between me and you was the inspiration for this new segment. Chris Fink, who came on the show last year and wanted, I think predicted Notre Dame would beat Virginia by 100, and damn if they didn't come close to it without Brendan Armstrong. He's not only on the Bears. I mean, they're so decimated at the receiver position right now. He's been running with the ones, according to some reports out of Hallis Hall this week. So good on you, Chris Fink. You've always got a seat at the table on this show if you want to come back. Maybe Pete's cooled on you. I don't know. I'm just shocked that Pete did not name this segment after you, because I thought that's the direction we were going in with this.
Definitely, definitely. All right. Well, that's it for our comeback edition of the Shamrock. Now it will just be regular episodes of the podcast. We'll be back next Tuesday, August 16th. Thanks for returning to the show. It's good to be with you guys again. We're discussing maybe a live show later this summer, but certainly we'll do one of preseason. We'll definitely do one of those interactive ones that we did before the Fiesta Bowl. That was fun. We'll get around to that too. So until then, he's Matt. I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us again, finally, on the Shamrock.